Vectis Radio. Vectis Radio. FM 104.6, bringing the island's community together.
And a very good afternoon to you out there. It's 5 minutes now past midday, and this is the Lunchtime Social Debate, the last hour of this, the mid-morning show here on Vectis Radio 104.6 FM with me, Andy Knight, and delighted, somewhat anxious, but still delighted to welcome into the studio. Help. I'm sending out an SOS here by Morse code at the same time, but I'm delighted to welcome back into the studio my old mucker, Kim Philby's here. Good afternoon, Kim.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
You're too far away. Come
Am
closer.
I too far
come
closer.
Come closer.
I can't
come
closer.
Oh, hang on. There's nothing happening there. Hang on.
Well, am I turned up? Oh, hello. I am now.
You are. There are things going on here which shouldn't
you
be going on.
You didn't have me up, did you? You didn't have the thingy up, did you?
No, and I might not in a minute either. But Kim Philby's here, along with Debs Allen. Very good afternoon, Debs.
Good afternoon. Nice to be back, I think.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, jury's still out on that, I think, at the moment, to be fair. But anyway, if anyone out there wants to come and give me a hand, because I've got my hands full this afternoon.
only for an hour.
Kim and Debs, only for an hour. I shall never last. But it's great to have you guys in. Thank you so much for coming in.
It's all right.
Good to see you. And yes, this is like the old days, Kim.
It is. It's lovely, except it's green. It's very green.
What are we talking about now?
What? It's green.
The studio, it's got very green.
Oh, right, yes, of course.
I haven't been in for ages.
Well, it's all been upgraded and super duperfied.
It's very lovely.
It is lovely.
I like green and pink. It works for me.
We're so pleased for you, Kim.
I'm glad you noticed my pink tights. That's
I
so sweet
did.
Of you.
My
Thank
pink
you so
scarf
much.
Looked a match.
Oh, lovely. We're all coordinated
we
in
are,
here.
We are.
So we're going to be chatting for the next hour up until 1 o'clock about anything that crosses
nonsense.
Our minds. The usual stuff, yeah. But it is precision nonsense, as
yes,
always.
That's true.
It's well planned. And several things to talk about we can consider, but let's start off with Pancake Day tomorrow, of course. Pancake Tuesday, Shrove Tuesday, to give its correct name. Of course, that means it must be the beginning of Lent, isn't it? So
I'm not lending anything.
Well, you're giving up lending, then, because you're supposed to give up something. So,
yeah, I've given up enough this
so
year.
So Lent is all about, I mean, it's a very traditional thing, isn't it?
It is,
it's
very much so.
Based on food, really,
it is, yes.
In terms of giving up everything, which is why we use up all the eggs and stuff, is that right?
That's absolutely right. All your eggs, all your flour.
Using things out of the larder to get rid of, to show. It's religiously based, isn't
it? Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Somewhere along the line.
You're not going to have any of that for the next how many days?
Well, I don't
40?
Know.
40 days,
is it 40
isn't it?
Days?
Yeah, I think it is.
I think so.
Yeah,
so it's using up, sort of, as you say, Debs, the stuff from the larder to get rid of all the things that are supposed to be not good for you that you're going to deny yourself for 40 days. Do people still do that? I mean, everyone knows about, you know, pancakes.
Some people will give up chocolate rather than anything else.
Or smoking,
yeah, they use it.
Use it as a...
It's basically,
yes. So it's just a vehicle for giving up something.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, obviously...
Is it sort of like a detox? Is it more of a detox these days?
I don't think it is, no. I still think there is a religious aspect to it. And people take it very seriously. And they feel better in themselves when they can actually say no to something.
Mm.
It's about denial. I don't do that.
Well, whereas I'm going to eat everything in my cupboard and I'm going to need 40 days to get rid of the fat afterwards. So.
But of course... that's a tradition for the period of Lent, Shrove Tuesday and so on. But of course, these days it's celebrated more by the pancake races. And
I
guess
of course
the Yarmouth Carnival Committee will, of course, be having their pancake races tomorrow morning in the square in Yarmouth, which is always tremendous fun.
That's always good.
Brilliant. I used to go and photograph that.
Oh, yes, of course.
For the papers.
Yeah, of course you did.
Brilliant.
Yeah, superb fun.
I'm not sure they ate them at the end of it, though.
Well, no, not those that they fell out of the frying pan.
My claim to fame is that I was on telly doing that for Radio Lollipop many, many years ago.
Oh, really?
We had a pancake race in Covent Garden. And then they actually interviewed me afterwards to find out what Radio Lollipop was all about.
Oh, how wonderful.
And you've still got it. It's still footage that is there.
Oh, wow. That was
with a dodgy
Radio
perm.
Lollipop was the
Radio
hospital
Lollipop
radio.
Was a hospital radio.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. It's International Children's Charity now.
Yeah,
so,
of course. Yeah, fantastic.
But yeah, no, that's my claim to fame. So I have known to toss a pancake in front of a television camera.
Well done, you.
And I didn't drop it.
No, I've been known to toss a pancake and it's stuck to the ceiling.
You can really?
It was a good
trying to work
flip.
That one out.
A little bit too much elbow in that, I
think.
Yeah,
I think so.
You need to work on your action there, Debs, a little more.
Yes, maybe.
Work on your action. But no, the pancake races. So where do the pancake races come from? Because, I mean, that's traditional as well, but, I mean, that's not religious.
Do you know, I have no idea. It's not something that's crossed my mind. I mean, it's always come. It came into my vision as something to fundraise with.
Yes,
but I guess pancake races have been around for a long time, haven't they?
Yeah, I think so. But it's something that, you
are
know,
you
the youngsters...
Part?
I'm not sure. No, I think I'm otherwise engaged to do other things tomorrow. But I'm sure a lot of people will turn out. Fingers crossed for the weather. It's a shame it's not today, really, because
yes,
I think the weather tomorrow is going to be less good. But fingers crossed, and I'm sure that'll be successful. And I'm sure wherever you are, there will be some pancake race oriented kind of activity going
on.
So good luck to everyone taking part in that. And then, of course, following that, we arrive at Wednesday with Valentine's Day. It's all happening this week.
Oh, no.
Oh, hang on. Oh, dear, hang on. Have I struck a nerve?
Calamity Day. I think it should be renamed, personally.
What day?
Calamity Day.
Calamity Day?
Yes.
So, let me get this right. So, for Lent, you're giving up romance. Is that right then, Debs?
Perhaps I should.
I'm just linking the two together.
I think it's quite a good idea, to be frank.
Shrove Tuesday before Valentine's Day is asking for trouble, isn't it? Really?
It is. It's just going to send me into a spiral of depression.
And me.
I think for a lot of people, the expectation for Valentine's Day, if you're in a relationship or even if you're not and you're hoping that someone might pay you some attention, I think that's quite a big thing for a lot of people. It shouldn't be. It's just another day.
Well, I find it a very expensive time of year because I have to send myself a sackload of cards in order to keep myself cheerful. The postage. Have you seen the price of a stamp?
Yeah, 65p for first class.
And my handwriting's so dreadful, I can't tell who it's from anyway.
Well, you clearly haven't spoken to Mr. Philby because Mr. Philby knows how to do everything on the cheap.
to do with the post office, obviously.
No, Valentine's.
Oh.
Seriously, he said, I'm not taking you out Valentine's Day.
Are you having one of these special dine-in for £2 meals?
Well, funny enough, we've bought it, but only on the say-so of my mother. Because she phoned us up. She said, you've got to go and get the dine-in meal for Valentine's. She said, I've had £37 worth of food for £20 and it will last me 3 days.
No, she's not caring at all.
So it was sort of put on the table and it was like, well, shall we go and do that then by me? And he went, well, I suppose so, but we can't have it Wednesday night. I'm out. I went, mine, but it's our anniversary as well.
It's not my wedding anniversary,
but it's the anniversary of the day we went out.
Oh, really?
Yes, because he's what he's like.
So he's keeping the tradition going by going out?
Yeah, absolutely. How dare
you?
How dare he?
Do either of you have a deferred Valentine's Day where you think, I'm not going to a restaurant on Valentine's Day because it's so ridiculously expensive?
Well, do you know, you say that, Debs, and I think you're absolutely bang on there because you have, really, because in fact, my dear wife and I, Kathy and I, were talking about this and we were sort of mulling it over and we're saying, do you know what? We won't go out to an overpriced meal where everything is, all scattered with rose petals everywhere, which is all very lovely and super and nice and so on, if you like that sort of thing. But we thought, no, it will be much nicer if we have, we'll have the candles on the table and we'll have a meal in and a bottle of wine. Nobody's got to drive and we can just relax and enjoy each other's company in the comfort of our own home.
And tomorrow you can just go and find a rose, get some petals, throw them over her,
absolutely,
say Happy Valentine's.
It's not tomorrow.
It's Wednesday, sorry.
I'm traumatised
already.
I should probably go out in the garden and pick one or two of the... do a bit of weeding and scatter them around.
Oh, God, you cheapskate. You sound like Mr. Foof.
Is he listening, by any chance?
He can't get it there, can he?
Oh, so we can say what we like.
We can say what we like. Well, I'll tell him afterwards, though, because I'm very honest.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that'll drop me right in it, then, won't it?
But, not at all.
So, yeah, then we've got Valentine's Day, and then hopefully, before too long, because we have got, I'm sure you have as well, daffodils everywhere at the moment. And it's wonderful. My favourite flowers, because I think they're so gorgeous. But, I mean, there's spring and Easter to look forward to. And,
don't.
I mean,
Easter eggs, children. Oh.
What, children?
Grandchildren. I have to buy it. If you buy one, you've got to buy them all an Easter egg.
I thought you were talking about what you were eating. I was going to say, I love children, but I couldn't eat the whole one.
Nor could I.
Nice barbecue, though.
Are they?
You
rotisserie?
Can't say that.
Yes, we can. Wow. You just did.
The whole Easter thing, that's why you have Easter eggs chocolate at the end of Lent. You've stopped all the nice
nicely
things.
Nicely done, and then Debs. You've brought it right back around. You've
got it absolutely spot on there. That's why we binge on chocolate at Easter after we're having given it up for Lent.
Yes.
Ah, brilliant. So well done. You've tied that up very neatly in a bow there. Perhaps we should leave that one there then.
I think we should.
Marvellous. anyway, so just having a look at one or two other things here and moving on to a completely different topic now. I see that the NHS... there's a new campaign come out now because we all know about the dreadful state of the NHS and the pressures they're under, particularly at this time of year. It just seems to be, managing panic, really, and chaos generally. But the campaign that's just been announced is that parents of young children with minor illnesses, and they do stress minor illnesses, should be taking their children to the pharmacy, not to the GP. In order to, I guess, relieve the strain on general practice and medical clinics. But how do you feel about that? I mean, I have to say, if I can just preempt by just putting in my thing, I mean, we have a couple of excellent pharmacies out our way in the West Wight, I have to say, and the service they provide, I think, is second to none. And indeed, as does the local medical centre at Brookside, but in the West Wight in Freshwater, of course. But what about the idea? I mean, in a way, are you not asking parents to sort of self-diagnose a little bit there? Is there a danger?
Can I ask what they mean by, sort of not severe? What do they consider nothing earth-shattering? Because if your child has a temperature, don't care who you are, it starts to rise, and you're going to want to go to a doctor. You are not going to trust a pharmacist. If your baby or your little one has a temperature and it's rising, they're not going to go to a pharmacist.
And they are parents, they are not doctors. Exactly. How can they determine whether it's serious or not?
But
I understand a pharmacist is very good at helping with a lot of things, and they generally are very helpful.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, if you're worried about your child, I'd rather say get them into an emergency GP appointment.
Yeah.
Exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
Because...
Well, I'm just looking at some of the figures on this, Debs, because there's been a survey carried out of around 2,000 people. Now, these, whether you believe in surveys and statistics is a personal matter, but they're saying that out of the 2,000 people in England, that were surveyed, 35% of parents of children, young children, that's under the age of five, would go to a GP if their child had a minor illness, earache, diarrhoea, or stomach ache, or something of that order. But 5% of those surveyed would go directly to A&E with their child. But I think the point you're making is a valid one, that if you're a parent and, essentially you're being asked to self-diagnose a young child of yours, and your point there, Kim, about temperature, if a high temperature persists, then, instantly alarm bells ring as a parent, don't they, really?
Well, they do, and there's two things I'd like to say about this, actually. If you are in A&E and a baby comes through, or a child, that child will be seen first.
And rightly so.
And I think that's absolutely correct.
Of course.
I've had a lot of dealings with the NHS this past year, and I've got to say, I have no complaints whatsoever. They have been brilliant, and I just want to chalk that up for them, because they get a lot of bad press, and it actually isn't their fault. But they have been brilliant, and I think that GPs, if you can get past the receptionists, and I'm talking in general, if GPs were to be able to take that child first, that would be so much better. I don't see quite so much of that. If you're sitting in a doctor's waiting room and a child comes in, it has to take its turn.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's right. I think if you have a child, by all means, move them on. They're on their way in, I'm on my way out. That's the way I look at it. Well, so that's what my mother says. She's 91, bless her. I'm glad I'm on my way out rather than on my way in. Yeah. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And their lives should be put first. That's only my thought. It's only my
feeling. But I think that there is still a danger with this almost self-diagnosis that parents will be given, the charge with actually undertaking, according to this, if it is a campaign by the NHS to relieve pressure. And, you can understand the reasons behind it, I guess. But if parents are going to have to self-diagnose, surely it's an accident waiting to happen.
Well, it is, because how many times, in my experience, friends of mine have been thinking their child has meningitis.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been a rash, and they do the old glass test and that and the other.
So that
and they frighten themselves to death.
Mm.
So how on earth, why wouldn't it be better just to pick them up and go and have it diagnosed properly?
But also, isn't the NHS number, telephone number, still available where you can phone up, get expert advice from a trained nurse?
111,
or...
111 was the number, wasn't it?
Yes, I think it's still going.
So
from my point of view, and I don't have children, but if I did and that was an issue, my first port of call was to ring that number and ask a qualified person their advice on what the symptoms are, and they will tell me go to a pharmacist or go to your GP or A&E.
I thought that's how it worked. I'm surprised that we're now back to this, oh no, you've got to take them to a pharmacist.
But is it not, I mean, without necessarily widening the topic, you know, without due process, if you will, but I mean, is that not just a symptom of the fact that the NHS generally is creaking so badly?
Yeah, definitely.
And fracturing in all sorts of different areas, that the, you know, the hopefully the peak of the winter demand, if we can put it that way, when of course services, NHS services, are put under increased strain at that time of year, and particularly I suppose in our locality because of our demographic and the elderly population that we have here on the island, you know, the local services are being stretched to breaking point, and this is just another means of trying to relieve that stress. So you know, is it all to do with a much wider issue of resourcing the NHS appropriately?
Absolutely. Cut out most of the middle management for a kick-off.
There was something on the news last week about the NHS and how they'd been NHS UK cancelling a huge percentage of non-urgent procedures. Again, to relieve the staff so they can deal with... what's supposedly more serious at that moment, rather than someone who might develop a more serious illness by not being treated for their non-urgent thing. I mean, it's a really difficult thing to call, but they're obviously trying to turn their attention to dealing with the more serious cases.
And that begs the question again, I think, Deb's off, you know, following on from that, in terms of local issues here, of course, there is this proposal that severe care treatments will be happening not at St Mary's on the island, our only remaining hospital, that they will be transferred to Southampton and Portsmouth, which brings with it a whole basket full of different issues in terms of the isolation of patients, removing them from you know, the ability of their local family and friends to visit without considerable cost and logistical inconvenience, and so on. And again, I mean, I would echo, I think, what you were saying earlier, Kim, that, I mean, I think the NHS on the island and the staff of all the medical practices and St Mary's Hospital do a fantastic job. And I think that certainly my experience with my elderly mother, for example, I have nothing but praise, huge praise for the staff the island in the NHS. But there is this proposal to change the, you know, the services that will be available here, and so that, you know,
I can see that bringing in all sorts of naughty things.
Well,
it's
surely
going to open Pandora's box, isn't
surely
it?
Surely the cost of transferring patients by ambulance, on the ferry, by air. The cost of that, surely they can just reinvest that money to provide better services on the island to stop everyone going off.
I think so.
A helicopter is going to cost thousands for one patient.
Yeah.
What's the figure on that, the ambulance? Is it something like £10,000 a day?
Yeah,
to run?
That is not funded, of course.
Only £10,000 a day.
Yeah.
And wouldn't it be better, it not be better to invest the money, as Deb says, and then have specialist units on the island? You know, there has to be a way around that. Because from my experience, just getting across to Southampton to go to the hospital or wherever, it's the cost, it's the time, it's all it.
Well, no, I mean,
without being airlifted, I'm talking about just going over there get there.
But as a visitor, if you have a friend or relative who has been transferred to a mainland hospital, where I'm sure that the treatment they would receive would be excellent, that's not really the issue, is it? I mean, the actual cost of travelling to and from the island to the mainland to visit, I mean, people won't be able to do it, and that will lead to more isolation of the patient.
Absolutely right.
Well, it will, and I have first-hand experience. Years ago, I was with someone who had a lot of surgery on the mainland in Southampton General. It's not just the cost, it's how tiring it is for the person caring for or looking after the rest of the family, the pets, everything, and having to get over there for visiting time. Mm. And just to get to Southampton General is a 4-hour journey time, let alone the time you're allowed to be there.
Sure.
And it's an £11 taxi ride.
Yeah, well, that's it. You've got to get a taxi as well.
Because there's no way you can get there by bus.
But the isolation of a patient who's been transferred for critical care that we're led to believe might be one of the reasons that patients will be transferred from St Mary's to the mainland hospitals. The well-being, the emotional well-being in terms of being isolated and then being aware of the fact they're isolated from their immediate friends and family, perhaps who live near them on the island, and everyone can get to St Mary's one way or the other. And also, conversely, the other side of that coin, of course, is the sense of helplessness, perhaps, of the friends and family who feel that they can't visit and support and be there as often because of the cost and the time.
I think that's worse. I think it's worse for the people on the other side rather than the patient. Because it might be funny, social media, you got your phone, you're allowed your phone now, you can obviously be chatting to people, Facebook, whatever. But it would be, for me, it would be the helplessness of not being able to get there.
Yes.
I would hate that.
And then the cost. Because at some point, I stayed in one of the hospital accommodation places for a week.
Mm.
Now, it wasn't anything glamorous, and I didn't expect it to be.
Sure.
But that's still a cost.
Yeah.
And they are doing that for people who've got relatives in intensive care for whatever reason. And especially on from the island, if you say, I can't get backwards and forwards, I can't afford it.
Yeah. No.
It's just so time-consuming.
I mean, people got up in arms about, the hospital car park charges. Well, you know, that pales into insignificance compared to the costs of getting cross-Solent travel and taxis at the other end, apart from the time element and everything else. And, we started off with this in terms of this idea of the NHS now recommending that parents send their children, or take their children, rather, to pharmacies to begin with. But the whole thing is all these different facets of what is just a very sick, if you'll pardon the pun, organisation, the NHS. It's
broken.
It's not coping. I mean, you ever see it being brought back from what I consider is the brink, as it appears to be at the brink at the moment, of just not functioning?
I think you and I have talked about this before, and I think we concluded on that particular day that it really has to be stopped and started again. We have to redo the whole lot. How you do that, we didn't know. But I think that's the only way. It's to literally relook at everything. And how you do that? How do you do that with... It was like we were talking about... Yeah, it was the NHS because, we've paid in, we've all made, contributions. It all sounded like such a great idea in the beginning. And it's an idea that has blossomed and got so overblown. How do you bring it back? To what the original intention was.
Because the population is completely different.
Yeah.
The demographic, particularly on the island, like you said, Andy, is towards a more mature person whose medical needs are going to more attention. But them suggesting that you take your child to a pharmacist links in with this. They're trying to save money, but they're making money from people going to the hospitals to park or going to the GP. I mean, fortunately, I don't know any GP surgery yet that charge you to park there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, ours.
Oh, I see.
If you go down to Brookside, you have to go in the car park, which is a pay car park.
Yeah, but that's true.
I'm saying the income they're going to lose from not letting you go.
Yeah, sure.
From just generally from parking, because they make millions from it, which obviously some of it must go to the NHS Trust. I don't know. Hopefully not just going to the parking companies. So it swings around about how do they balance what they're going to save by
this. How do you view this trend, which seems to be something which is kicked around in Parliament and over coffees and pints in pubs across the land, about the privatisation of elements of the NHS in order to salvage something from it? I mean, it's becoming more the model, isn't it, that the NHS is becoming more privatised and therefore more commercially based? I mean, is that going to work, or is it more going back to what you said, Kim, about, let's look again at the national insurance contributions and what's ring-fenced for funding and supporting our NHS? Do we completely strip that back and then rebuild it? Does it stay in sort of public ownership, if you will, in terms of being supported by taxes and national insurance? Or?
I've got two heads on this one. I mean, I've never had to pay for... Well, I have paid for private treatment, but I wouldn't say my treatment by the NHS was any different. So I have a real mixed feeling about this. Having said that, I've experienced the Spire in Southampton. Very, very lovely. It's a private thing, but you can go as an you get recommended there as an NHS. It's very lovely, and I dread to think how much it costs to keep it the way it is. It's absolutely beautiful. But you look at America, and America are trying to bring in a sort of NHS, if I'm right in thinking
that. Obamacare. Yeah, right,
was what they were trying. But they've worked for years by paying. And it hasn't broken down, as far as we know. I mean, I don't know. But
then again, there are huge swathes of the population. There are tens of millions of people who don't
who
have
don't
healthcare
have
insurance
because
they can't afford it.
And they can't get it.
And they can't get it.
At all.
So you've got to have a balance, haven't you?
Yeah.
That's what that says to me. We have to have the NHS, but I think we should revamp it. I think we need to look at it again and see where it's not working and if you can draw the horns in or do anything else. And I think you're going to have some things that you pay for. I mean, you pay for the dentist.
Yeah.
But even on NHS rates, you're still paying an awful lot.
Sure.
Well, I think, I mean, again, there's been lots in the news about how much the medical companies are charging the NHS for prescription drugs. Drugs to treat cancer, AIDS, all sorts of different illnesses. They need a financier who's a good negotiator that says to those companies, no, we need this on a mass level, you bring your prices down. They haven't got anyone control, in my opinion, they haven't got anyone controlling that, and they are throwing money after expensive treatment that doesn't have to be that expensive.
Then you get this postcode lottery, don't you, where, you know, there are certain authorities, health authorities or primary care trusts in certain parts of the country that will afford, because of their financial or economic makeup, they will be able to afford the drug, whereas in other parts of the country, people are left to suffer because their authority is unable to fund that. And you're absolutely right. It seems to be a postcode lottery as much as anything, doesn't
it? Yes, and also, as much as bank nursing is great, it must cost them a fortune.
Well, that again begs the question, again, widening the topic, if you will, but we need to wrap this up in a moment or two. But, you know, after Brexit, with the immigration restrictions that there will be, and we are all familiar with the, we've talked about the extraordinary staffing of the NHS and the great work they do from every level, you know, from the cleaners to the consultants and everyone in between and associated with the NHS. But, you know, a huge proportion of the nursing staff alone are immigrants to this country and do a tremendous job.
They do, and
you know what's going to happen. It's not going to get any better, is it?
Well, I'm hoping that they will get that their jobs based on their qualifications and be allowed to work in this country based on their ability to do the job properly.
Well, I think it's essential, isn't it? And that, you know, there are so many worrying. We haven't really come to a very positive conclusion on this particular topic, but I don't think it's very easy for anyone to. If they can't in Parliament, then we've got no chance. But anyway, there we go. We'll wrap this one up for the moment. It's coming, well, it's just after 12:30. This is the Lunchtime Social Debate.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6. For the people, by the people.
Squire's Barbershop are the longest serving barbers in Pyle Street. They're open every day except Sunday between 9 and 5.30. And on Saturdays you can beat the rush as they open at 8 a.m. So go and see Jay the Lardy Barber. He's back from his travels and ready with the clippers. For a no-nonsense haircut, it has to be Squire's Barbershop, 68 Pyle Street, Newport. Get in, get trimmed and go.
Livewire Electric Shop, for all your domestic appliance needs. Appliance sales, repairs, spare parts and TVs. There are 5 and 7 year warranties available on selected brands. Find us in Orchard Street, Newport, or call us on 01983 522 420. Livewire, your one-stop appliance shop.
This is Vectis Radio, the Isle of Wight's local community station. Vectis Radio was set up on the 23rd of January 2010. We are a community radio station which promotes local businesses, events, charities and more. The station pays for itself by offering affordable but competitive advertising rates to local companies. For more information, call our sales team on 01983 527 733.
Sky Academy helps young people unlock their potential through TV, creativity and sport.
Turning my dream into a reality kickstarting my career
and helping me build confidence.
Through fantastic mentors and great opportunities,
we're discovering possibilities we never knew existed.
We believe in potential. Search Sky Academy to see how it can help a young person you know.
Your support matters. We operate thanks to the support of local businesses. If you would like to advertise on Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, contact our team today. marketing@vectisradio.fm.
And we're back. Very good afternoon. 25 minutes to 1 o'clock. This is the final hour of the mid-morning show. Now, transmogrified before your very eyes into the first hour of the afternoon show, I think. But between 12 and 1, right up till the 1 o'clock news, you've got today's lunchtime social debate with me, Andy Knight, joined in the studio by Kim Philby and Debs Allen. Great to have you here, ladies. Thank you very much indeed. And just moving on, having a look at one or two other things locally and otherwise going on. And I read with interest that Willoughby Matthews from the Isle of Wight Labour Party, the island's Labour youth officer, is trying to convince our MP, Bob Seeley, that he should lobby the government on reducing the voting age to 16. So that is a current issue. And Bob Seeley, as I say, the island's MP, currently being requested, shall we say, encouraged to lobby in Parliament for a discussion on reducing the voting age to 16. Where are we on this, guys?
Does this Willoughby person know... known any 16-year-olds?
Well, why do you say that? I'm interested in...
Have you never heard of the Kevin stage? They don't know what they want for breakfast, let alone who to vote for.
But, you know, in as much as you can do all sorts of things when you're 16...
Yes.
best we left
I always
that
think that. No, but I always thought that was really strange.
Yes, but, you I mean, bearing that, in mind you can do all of that...
not voting.
The fact that you can't vote, I mean, you know, a lot of school leavers will leave school and enter employment, apprenticeships or jobs one way or the other, and that is their right to do so, and therefore they will start paying tax. Should they not have a say in how their tax is spent?
Maybe if they are a taxpayer and they are that age... Yes, let them vote.
So you would differentiate at the age in terms of whether you're...
Yeah, if you're an employee...
But then surely those that are going on to higher education, further or higher education, Debs, then they will be mounting student loan debts. They will be hopefully training to perhaps, although it's not always the case by any means, but that's a different topic, but, you know, perhaps obtaining employment in a career structure... that will take them to a higher earning level, therefore paying more tax in the future. So by virtue of choosing to go into higher education rather than paid and taxable employment at the age of 16, should they be rowed out of the picture?
It's really difficult, isn't it? Because you think, well, how many 16-year-olds would want to vote? Exactly. I don't know how old the...
Well, for that matter, how many adults want to vote, to be fair?
Well, yeah.
Well, looking at the turnout, it's exactly right.
You know.
And also, if their amount of education on politics to make a choice of who they're going to vote for. How many? I'm not being patronising to 16-year-olds, but there's going to be a large percentage that have no idea, not interested.
But surely that begs the question. No, I think that's a fair point, Des. But surely that begs the question that that schools, and I know there are citizenship on the curriculum as a topic, as a subject, but it's probably no more than an hour or two a week because of the pressures on curriculum, which again is a different discussion. Mm. But citizenship seems to me to be, albeit there, but almost as a token gesture, I'm afraid I would say, in terms of my teaching at middle school when I used to. But there should be more education in terms of, you know, just in terms of self-management, in terms of bank accounts, what's a mortgage, what are the political parties, how do you vote, what happens to your money, where's your tax go, all these sort of things. Surely to arm people, to assist them in making the decision at the age of 16 as to whether they leave school and go into some form of employment or whether they go on to higher or further education. But education, because you brought that up, I think is a valid point, but without the information, they can't make informed decisions, surely, at the age of 16 anyway.
However you say that, I've got a bit of a bee in my bonnet. none of us were educated about Brexit and how to vote and what it meant. So to a 16-year-old just voting in the general political arena, they're going to be in the same position as the rest of us.
Absolutely.
We don't know what we're voting for half the time. I don't know who would benefit from a 16... You know, if a 16-year-old can vote, how the political party is going to benefit from that, and what are their reasons for... I'd be interested to know what their reasons are for lowering the vote.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point.
Yeah. Why does he want this? Why does he want Bob Seeley to lobby
for this? Is there a perception, perhaps, that you're both highlighting there, which I think is a very interesting point? Is there a perception that perhaps younger voters will be more inclined to vote for a certain political colour?
They'll vote for whoever gives them a free SIM card. Well, they will. Sorry, but they will. If there's something in it... You know,
I think that's a little disingenuous in terms of a lot. I mean, yes, there may be a number who would be swayed by what's in it for me.
Find
I'm not sure
majority.
You're allowed to bribe the voting public.
You're probably not, but they'll find a way of doing it because they're politicians after
all. But then politics, surely, in a way, I mean, the word bribe is quite a strong word, but I mean, that's an... encourage.
Right, yeah.
But surely that's what political parties do to every single one of us when we come up for campaigns prior to elections, whether they're local or
they
national.
Do, don't they
are
promise things.
Perhaps not bribing us, but they're dangling carrots.
They promise, don't they?
And
they
in the States, just as an anecdotal thing, if Trump said, right, I want the whole of the American public from the age of 5 to be able to vote, and you go along, and the only thing in the box to be able to is you just need to put a big cross there, and you're voting for me.
Exactly, though.
You can let let anyone vote, but there must be a genuine reason why someone would want to allow a 16-year-old, or not
Absolutely.
Allow.
I want to know why.
Well, I mean, now
it.
That we are celebrating the centenary, of course, of women. Getting the right to vote, the suffragette movement 100 years ago, which is all over the news at the moment. And it's fascinating hearing all the history, which I know most of us will be familiar with, but not all of us, and certainly the younger generation, perhaps, although it may be part of their history curriculum, it won't be a huge part of it. And I'm sure that because that is so much in the forefront of people's mind at the moment, because there's so much media coverage, rightly so, in terms of commemorating and indeed celebrating the Votes for Women movement from 100 years ago, that it has brought perhaps this issue into the arena, into the spotlight a little bit more in terms of, well, what is the right to vote and who should have it? Which is why perhaps this issue is a sideline issue to, you know, this Votes for Women centenary. But in terms of who should have the right to vote, lowering the voting age, I think, has to go hand in hand, in my view, and it's only my opinion, with an increase in education to accompany it. But that brings with it, again, in my view, again, a huge sackful of problems, because if you turn that rock over, goodness only knows what you find under it. Because in terms of religious education, and I'm not widening this topic particularly, but just as an example, perhaps, having been a teacher myself, in terms of religious education, you have to be so careful that, I mean... When you're talking to a class of children of mixed race, ethnic background, and religious upbringing, you have to be so careful to avoid the collective noun we or us.
You're actually teaching
about religion. You're not teaching necessarily from a particular religious viewpoint, for the sake of argument, the Christian viewpoint, let's say. You are not teaching from that, and the curriculum has to show balance in terms of teaching from all the different major world religions, and acquainting young people with the tenets of belief, the history, the background, and the characteristics of those religion. And you have to be very, very careful about how you actually word your teaching, to avoid any sense of bias or one way or the other in how you go about it. And I can see that being an issue, that if politics, which of course is taught at higher educational levels and at sixth form and so on, but that is of course post 16, how you teach religion has the same pitfalls attached to it.
Yes, because you can omit certain politics because it's not what you agree with, therefore you're not teaching broadly. But as far as the voting goes, maybe when you are at school or college age 15 and you are at the school, there is a thing within the education arena where you ask the question of the pupils, would you like the vote at 16 and why? So you can either put yes or no and your reasons, or just yes or no, and then you can get an idea whether those people really want to the opportunity to vote.
I hate to introduce the word because I know it brings with it all sorts of connotations that are largely negative, but I mean, is there grounds for a referendum?
Oh, no.
I told you that would happen.
Stop there.
But a mini referendum within the education...
But no, I think a referendum would have to be a national referendum in terms of all those people who are currently old enough to vote. Do you think that lowering the voting age would be a useful or valuable addition to our society?
I absolutely don't see it.
16-year-olds wouldn't be part of that referendum, funnily enough.
Well, no, because they couldn't take part.
Exactly.
And there are going to be lots of, I don't know, from 10 to 17, 18-year-olds that will think, no, I want to get into politics, I want to get into business, I want to be able to vote, like you said, to have an input and who's going to set my future work life. I can see, no, there are going to be those,
section. But can I just
But there's about 20% of them.
Thank you. That's what I was coming to.
80% are going to go, do you know what, I want to go to McDonald's or another burger place and meet my friends
and
hang out.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You then are opening up for everybody. It's my favourite theme, isn't it? Playing to the lowest common denominator. The trouble is you can't do that. That cannot be allowed to happen. And I think, like you rightly say, it's probably 80% of 16-year-olds will go, what?
But I think that
and I might be being very wrong, very
no, no,
cruel,
no.
I'm
not disputing that. I mean, the figures obviously are open to being more precise if someone undertook a study on that. But I mean, in terms of the principle that you're outlining there, I think you're absolutely right. But then you could equally say, I think, and Debs, you kind of touched on it, that I mean, I think a lot of older people, middle-aged and even younger people, young adults, are so disenfranchised by the whole political issues at
they
the moment,
though.
Which has been exacerbated by your point you made earlier, Debs, about the fact, or maybe it was you, Kim, I apologise, about the fact that we are none the wiser, no matter how much you try and understand Brexit, we are none the wiser. We were badly informed, we were given misinformation at the very best, I think, when we were asked to make
up. Well, nobody knew.
It was just on the fly, wasn't it?
A lot
of people are disengaged from the whole political issue anyway now. I mean, if there were to be an election next month, I'd be surprised if half a dozen people bothered to vote because nobody knows what's going on.
Well, they don't. I mean,
so everyone is kind of disengaged. So trying to engage yet another part of society, is that actually even viable?
I don't
Never
think
mind
Let's
worthwhile.
Sort this out now, for now.
Yeah. Well, enough already. Yeah.
You know, I have a 20-year-old and a 27-year-old at the time of the Brexit vote, and neither one of them could make up their minds. They really didn't know.
No.
And they both said to us, where can we find independent, honest information?
Yeah, but see, that's no reflection on your children. That's a reflection
on the misinformation.
Yeah,
that's exactly what I'm saying.
There was no information. Flick a coin.
Yeah.
That is how precise and fact-based it was.
What I still can't understand, there are so many votes that happen in the political arena, in Parliament and government and other areas in the House of Commons and the House of Lords and so on, where a majority is not sufficient on its own. It has to be of a certain magnitude. Now, with Brexit, something so important, and I know we've strayed off from the initial topic, but I don't care. You know me. We'll go wherever it goes.
We're going for Brexit.
But just on the Brexit point, I mean, it was so close to call, 51-49.
Yes.
Without the decimal points on that. But, 51-49, that was not significantly decisive, in my view, to make that kind of momentous decision. It should have been that we needed the country to vote at least 60-40 or something.
Yes.
I don't know. And that's the sort of margins and the proportions that are involved in major decision-making in terms of what the government has to do. They have to achieve a majority of so many, or, that proportion for yes or that proportion for no. And with Brexit, it was just a referendum, and whatever the votes were tallied up, one for one for the other, that was it, and it was 51-49. In my view, for that bigger decision, that was the wrong way to treat that vote. It was not significantly decisive.
Well, it wasn't, because nobody knew whether Remain... What either leave or remain, what does that mean? Yes, there was lots of things about border control. In my opinion, just change your border control regulations, like America, Australia, Canada, anywhere. Sure. Do that, because that seemed to be the only thing that anyone picked up on, is to do with immigration. It wasn't, we want to stop everyone coming in. It's, we just want some form of control to stop anyone coming in. That's my opinion, and you should have just flicked a coin.
So you do you think that it instead of, I mean, it's no, I mean, this is all now crying over spilt milk, if you have a view that suggests that Brexit was not a good thing, which we're not saying.
Well, nobody knows,
knows, that's the point, that's really what we're saying. But are you suggesting that it would be better to have tackled each of the issues that Brexit has supposedly addressed in terms of free trade, immigration, the cost of being a member, you know, the £350 million a week and all this sort of stuff, that each of those issues would have been better addressed by the government within the European Union in terms of negotiating separate issues?
Yes, there's a thing called forecasting.
Now, you're shaking your head, Kim, but...
There's a thing called forecasting. Mm. You don't put an idea out there, let's do this, and when someone says why, you say, oh, actually, I don't know. Mm. We're just doing it for the sake of it, yeah, to get people riled up. We have no idea if it's a good idea or not. Mm. Why even make that decision?
Because it was an ill-conceived idea, yes, by arrogant grey suits who thought it'll never happen. We'll just do it. We'll keep the populace happy.
What, so it's because they had committed in their policies to having a referendum that they thought, well, just as a palliative, we'll just throw it out
because
there so people would, can feel they've had something.
Because somebody said, we will do this. Mm. Yeah, we will do this. And they thought, yeah, but it will never happen. Nobody will go for it because it's too much. We've got too much invested in euro. Mm. There's this, that and the other. And they didn't think about the little man. Mm. The little man who gets fed up with being told, well, that's the European Court of whatever. Mm. Or this is because of euro. Or this is, you know, them. And they didn't bargain on that. I agree with you. I don't think it was big enough majority, but that all should have been laid out in the beginning. What they should have done, instead of pushing it through as quickly as they did, because let's face it, they then had to go back on it and they thought they could get themselves out of it and they couldn't. But what they should have done was said, right, we are going to do this, but if there is not a majority of X, we will not take that. We will ignore it, that is it, we will stay in. That's what they should have done.
But it strikes me that, I mean, apart from when the campaigns, when the referendum was announced, that prior to that, when it became, you know, media frenzy in terms of everyone talking about Europe good, Europe bad, European Union, trade, immigration, blah, 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 all those different elements, that, I mean, I don't think, and I'm only speaking for myself, it would be unfair to speak on anyone else's behalf, obviously, but I don't think that I was aware of what our relationship with Europe was when we were part of the European Union, to be perfectly
honest. Not really. We were just controlled by Brussels. That's what I was trying to say.
And that was a kind of pejorative term, though, wasn't it, Deb? Mm. That was kind of, oh, we're all controlled by Brussels. We don't run our own country.
That's what I was trying to say.
It was very much kind of rump. And that may well have been the case. But I don't think any of us were, I have to say me again. I don't think I was particularly clear on how that the machinations of that actually translated into how it affected me and me and mine on a day-to-day basis. I don't know whether it was good, bad or indifferent, because I don't really know how it worked, other than the fact everyone said, well, we're all controlled by Brussels. And
that's what they forgot. They didn't actually explain any of it. We
weren't explained that before the referendum was even thought of.
No, we
were just part of Europe because we made that decision
in 1974
or whatever it was.
They might as well just said, what colour do you like, orange or green?
Yeah.
Tick a box.
Exactly.
Yeah. No reason.
Yeah.
No. We're not telling you what's better, what's worse, because we don't know.
That's just my pick point. A colour. Exactly. They didn't. It was ill thought.
It meant nothing.
Nah, I mean, it's the biggest shambles of all time, to be fair, isn't it?
And now we've got to pay EU, B, billions to leave it. I don't understand.
And
that.
We're going to be part of it for the transition period and then for years and years, maybe a decade or so afterwards, because the extrication, the measures to extricate are so complex and so on that I doubt if even the highest barrister in the land understands the small print, to
I
be fair, let
does.
Alone the likes of me. But, you know, it still comes back to that point, and I'm sorry banging on about it, but you've just reminded me of it again, Kim, that I just simply don't think that that majority, which, yeah, OK, in hard, cold numbers, according to the people who bothered to vote, you know, more voted to leave than remain. OK, I accept that. We live in a democracy, you have to accept that. But for me, a decision of that momentous nature needed to have a much more sizable, significant majority in order to make this happen, in my view.
Well, that's what they
and
had.
I'm not claiming to be an exit or a remainer.
No.
I'm just saying, as a decision, I think it was wrongly managed.
It was, and mainly because it was based on nothing specific.
It was like knitting fog, really, trying to get
the
detail.
There was no information.
Which is why the vote was so close.
Yeah, of course it was.
So going back to the 16-year-olds, they're as much entitled maybe to vote or not vote based on information or misinformation, and will have as much influence on anything in the government as we as voters have now.
I think there is a chance of becoming disingenuous about this, about 16-year-olds, but because it is their future that we are organising, and as you remarked earlier on a different topic, that, you know, they're on the way in, we're on the way out. And as a teenager, you know, whether you're rebellious, whether you're interested in how your country's run, or whether you're not and you're only interested in hanging out with your friends, whatever your makeup, whatever your political leanings, the fact remains that if you are a resident of this country and you are considered to be an adult in many other areas, other fields, and since it is your future that is being carved out by votes that are being taken by people older than you that you have no say in, there must surely be a fairly strong argument for suggesting that whether or not they use it, they should be given the chance to at the age of 16. That, you know, that I'm throwing that out as a question, not as a
Well,
as
maybe
a
they could do
campaign.
It like voting on something like Eurovision. So you've got the officials giving their points, and then the phone-in. The amount of people that phone in that vote from the public. I know this sounds a bit mad.
No.
I'm not explaining this very well.
No, you are.
So you have the major voting population, and then you have, I suppose this is what happens in the States with this collegiate voting thing.
You get a second.
So you have a second thing, which might have an influence if it's very close, that allows someone younger, if they want to vote, to have an influence, but not being with the main voting populace until they're 18. I don't know. Can you have a...
I think that there's some
what
merit
in
the model
though?
That you're... Well, yeah, I can see what you're saying there. I think that that might muddy the water in terms of the discussion that would need to be had.
Yes.
And I do understand what you mean.
Sorry, it sounds a bit like a sop to me.
Well, no, I'm not sure. I'm not saying it would
work.
I'm
just
thinking, could you do something like that? So there is a secondary...
Not when there's no money in the kitty and no time to do it. Sorry, but, you know, it comes down, at the end of the day, to brass tacks. All of it does. How much money have you got? Can you afford to do it? No.
And if we can't vote, because all those people that remain or go in the Brexit thing, look how, just for instance, Boris Johnson... He wanted to stay, didn't he? He's now...
Campaigning to But, I mean, what would be interesting, and we will never know the answer to the question, but it would be interesting now, bearing in mind that we seem to be no further in terms of clarity, in terms of what this all means and what will happen and when it will happen. Even the people who are in charge of negotiating it, and I'm talking obviously about, you know, the Boris Johnsons, the Prime Minister, Theresa May and other people, and David Davis and all these other people, they don't inspire me to believe that they've got any more idea of what's going on than I have, and I've got no idea at all.
I don't think they have either.
It makes you wonder how many people now who voted either to leave or to remain have changed their minds. And we'll never know the answer to that, but I wonder.
They should have another referendum.
Well,
I would lay money on it would still be a very similar result.
Do you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
Too close to call.
Really?
Yeah.
And forget it. Just
Do you think that those who swap sides will be in equal numbers and it'll still
come
out?
Yeah, it will. They will.
I think so.
No,
I agree with you.
I can't even remember what I voted.
Well, I can.
That's how confused I was.
Oh, that's good.
Well, from confused at
Strike
Newport here.
You
in
off the
few...
list. You're not allowed to vote anymore.
Only for Brexit.
We're going to have to wrap this up now. From confused of Newport here, that will be Kim Philby, Deb Cannon, and myself, Andy Nutt. We have no idea what's going on, but then those of you who are regular listeners, as if I've got any, but those of you who are regular listeners will know there is nothing new there. I have no idea what's going on at all, other than the fact that we are at the end of this Monday lunchtime social debate. So my enormous, huge and grateful thanks to Kim and Deb. Thank
You're
you, ladies.
Very welcome. Enjoyed it. Thank
Wonderful
you.
Have
enjoyed
to see.
It.
Very much so indeed. And I do hope you'll come back and join us again soon. But
we will.
Thanks to all of you listening out there as well. And I hope you've enjoyed the show. I'll be back on Friday for the mid-morning show at 10 o'clock. Join me then if you can. Up after the 1 o'clock news. Tony Christian's here for your afternoon show from 1 till 4. But that's it from us. Bye-bye for now. Bye-bye.